This is Living Connected, and we are your hosts, Katie and Kyle. Today, we have a special guest, and his name is Daniel M. Jones. He is an international best-selling author, a video influencer with an award-winning YouTube channel called The Aspie World. The Aspie World is the biggest YouTube channel dedicated to autism from an autistic person in the world. The channel is dedicated to autism awareness and understanding from an autistic person's point of view. Creating an engagement with real people to create a real change in a positive and uplifting way, and also helps raise money for charities like the National Autistic Society. Daniel has a diagnosis of autism, OCD, ADHD, and dyslexia, and uses his influence to help educate people about autism using his skills of video and social media influence. Daniel has also created the first ever neurodiverse panel talking about ADHD and autism at the VidCon US, which is the largest video convention in the world. I really hope that all of you enjoy this episode as much as we got to know Dan. It was our pleasure to have him on our podcast, and we hope to have him back. And we will put in the descriptions down below of some of his website, YouTube channel, and all of those awesome things. So, enjoy.
Yeah, I'm looking at your face and just say, and you, I think you're very irritatingly handsome, Daniel. I just want to say that one more time before we start the official show.
I feel like Eric's trying to wind me up here.
Probably.
It's like a filter.
I'll sign a picture.
No, and send it to him. There we go. He can hang it up on his wall. He'll look at you every day. Welcome, Living Connected. Welcome back. We are in this Zoom call together, and I feel really good and light, and we have a special guest today. His name's Dan, and he has the biggest YouTube channel in the world, and it's called The Aspie World, and it's dedicated to autism from an autistic person's perspective. So we welcome you in, Dan. Thank you for being here today. We are gonna do a little check-in with how we're feeling and how the week has been going, and then you can tell us a little bit about you, and then we can carry on our conversation. Sure. So I'll go first. I'm feeling very excited. I listen to your videos, Dan, all the time. And on Instagram, I see your lives, and I also follow a couple other people like Cody Speaks and Finding Cooper's Voice. And then I think there's Fathering Autism as well. So I follow all of those peeps trying to keep myself informed with the autism world. I am a substitute teacher, and a lot of the time I work in the special education department. So getting to know and following and understanding, having a deep, you know, acknowledgement for what I can do better to be a better teacher is something that I really strive to want to improve. So I appreciate what you put out in your content. It's probably super helpful for so many of us, regardless if we have kiddos on the spectrum or we're on the spectrum or if we don't, like myself. So I'm feeling great. I made banana bread with coconut and I chopped up all the nuts. And I forgot to put them in. And I'm like, darn it. So I had that. I also been saving the bees. We have a beehive at my parents' house that's in a wall. That's like the deck, right? And the deck has a wall. So it's been so hot that I've been trying to keep the grass in like a corner moist so that they have some water to drink, because, you know, they need all of that. And so I love saving the bees. And I know Eric has seen my videos on Facebook about that. And I wanted to add in a little tiny knowledge that I had looked up, which was smiling. And I wanted to say that our brain releases tiny molecules called neuropeptides that help fight off stress and other neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, and endorphins that come into play when we smile. And then also...
on oxytocin.
Yes. Yeah. And then when we laugh, it can shift our mood, boost our immune cells, and increase blood flow to our heart, and it can strengthen our relationships. And lots of good things happen when we laugh. And from what I read, children laugh more than adults do. And every time I get into a room with Eric, I at least have a smile on my face, if not laughing at some point. So I am very grateful for that uplifting part of my life to have you in there, Eric. And thank you both for being here today and enjoying this time with me. And I feel complete. Thank you. Eric, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that little story. I am reminded or thinking about the idea that I feel great joy when I hear young people laugh, and certainly young children. So I suspect that both genetically and socially, we are programmed that we love to hear children laugh, young people laugh, and maybe even men are programmed to enjoy the laughter of young women, or however it might be. And I'm just reminded of that thought. I don't know if it's true. I hope there's a study somewhere. I'm really pleased to be here today. I don't know anything about Daniel. I saw the one video, and I really enjoyed our pre-show talk. So, and I'm so looking forward. I'm so excited. I've known a number of SPED teachers, special ed teachers here. We call them SPED teachers sometimes.
Yep.
Real fortunate that in my school district, the superintendent of the high schools is actually a former special ed teacher. So lots of great services for kids. And I know families, essentially families, who dedicate themselves to supporting kids that need support. And I truly believe that the kids who need support are the ones who have the hardest time asking for it. And while I know that's not specifically, Daniel, maybe what you deal with, it's just, for me, an important aspect of nonviolent communication, which is everything we do is an attempt to meet a need. And things like anger or acting out are tragic attempts to meet needs, which have lower probabilities of outcome of getting what we need.
Yeah.
That's my check-in, which is more education probably than you wanted. I'm in. So Daniel, how are you doing today? What's going on for you?
Wowzers, guys. Thank you so much. First of all, just to correct the lovely introduction that Katie's did, my YouTube channel is the largest dedicated autism information YouTube channel in the world. Not the largest YouTube channel in the world, because that is actually T-Series.
Thank you for that.
So that's that. No worries. And the second thing is that if you really want to help the bees, put down a plate of water with sugar in it. So mix a mixture of sugar water, because they do want to get hydrated, and they also like because that's a carbohydrate that would be really, really useful for them, especially in the hot days when they get kind of really like, lapsed and all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love all that stuff. So yeah, it's good to be here. Love both your stories. It's funny, I have a degree in chemistry. So hearing you talk about neuropeptides is really interesting. And I'm like, I'm like flashbacks to my degree, like, whoa, peptides. No, it's good. Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm really good. I had a good day, productive day. I've been, wow, I have 200 post-it notes stuck on my wall.
Wow.
It's quite a sight to see, to be honest with you. And the reason there's 200 post-it notes stuck on the wall is because they are the places available from my membership program, which is launching 1 month today. And so, we're ready to get ramping up with the marketing for this launch.
Sweet.
And so that was kind of fun, you know, putting post-it notes on the wall. Yeah, and just working, man, making a lot of these. I make these on my website. I've been printing out a lot of these. These are autism alert cards, and like you can wrap these out. There's information on the back of it.
Cool.
For, you know, if people are like, or on the spectrum, they might just see this. You know, they might get in trouble with the police or whatever, and you can just wrap this thing out. And so I did a sale recently. So like, loads of people have been ordering them. So I was like, so we make these in house now. So we have the production here. So, oh, busy day making stuff for my audience, and just really feeling grateful for being alive every single day. Thank God for the ability to be here, and the experience that I share with people, and the love that I have, and the abundance of opportunity that surrounds me, and remind myself that life is happening for me, not to me.
Yeah.
Never to get annoyed at things that are happening. There's a reason for it all, right?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for sharing. Do you feel complete?
I guess, that's an interesting question. Do I feel complete? I guess I would never feel complete because, you know, getting back to what you were saying about trying to perfect stuff or whatever, I guess, or striving to do better, is that you always want to do more. And by doing more, you're always striving to improve, right? And we are a cycle of improvement or change, as the Bodhisattva said. So in terms of what, feeling complete, one would have to feel perfect, right? But perfect is an unobtainable position, because if you reach a state of perfect, the only way you can go is to decline, because, right? It makes no sense. So I would say I am incomplete. That's a fantastic feeling, because it makes me strive to do more, to be more, to be better. So yeah, I'm happy with not being complete yet.
I love that. Not one person, like Eric, I don't know if you've come across it, but have you ever had a response? I mean, that's so true. We're not necessarily ever fully complete in the moment, because there's always going to be something, right?
Yeah.
That comes up, or...
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, that did happen to me 2 days ago, not quite as eloquently. So then I turned around and I said, are you complete for now? And we all had a good laugh about it. But thank you, Daniel. That is, yes, that is a more full-bodied response that is meaningful to me.
Excellent. I'm happy to share knowledge.
Yay. Awesome. Well, we I feel so grateful, and thank you for your share, and let's dive in, I think. And I know we both have tons of questions when it comes to NBC and, you know, the autism world. And I'm pretty sure, and I would say, I could want to say 100% sure, there's got to be some people out there who do NVC who could be on the spectrum. And I want this to be something that they could turn to if they need any, I don't know, inspiration or support and feel less alone. And so I'm really glad that you're here to help us with that, because, you know, we want to be able to have a wide variety of people that come into this podcast so that we can have the support that people could use for it. So I'm glad. Thank you. And I wanted to say, because I listened to Mayim Bialik's podcast, The Breakdown, and I don't know if you've listened to that or not, or any of you, both of you. And she had somebody on who...
No, I haven't come across that yet.
Yeah, she's awesome. She was on The Big Bang Theory. And then she was like hosting Jeopardy for a little while.
Okay.
She's awesome. She has her like PhD in neuroscience or something like that. And she had somebody on her podcast who was on the spectrum. And I wish I could remember who it was, but it was a recent podcast, so you probably would find it easily.
Sure.
And from what Mayim was saying, from what I was understanding, she had asked a question like, what is it like in your body? Because we like in NVC to talk about our body sensations that happen. And what is it like in your body when something doesn't feel right? So when your nervous system is flooded with overstimulation, where does it show up in your body? And what does it feel like when you're flooded from emotions like touch, sound?
It's mainly like, you know, when it's funny, because I would say it's almost like pain, you know, like a lot of people ask me, like, I hear certain words and those words cause me a lot of pain, like it like hurts, like it's more, and it's like a short, it's like almost like an electric shock, you know, like it's like ugh, and it really, but it's an electric shock that infuriates everything in you. And so it's funny, because if you think about autism, it's a neurological condition that impacts the ability for communication to enter the system in a certain way, which causes a lot of kind of other issues, right? And if you think about how a person, typically a neurotypical person in a typical environment, would hear a word or hear a sound or whatever, and they would react to it in a certain way, which is how it's evolved to do. A neurodivergent person on the spectrum would have that same input, but then obviously it would be completely different for the experience. And so it's really hard to explain, but I always feel it's like it's painful. And that's why a lot of people, like, you know, when things don't go right, when an experience isn't going right, when a routine is disrupted or a word is shared that you don't like, it hurts, you know, and someone can get very distressed with that, and people can't understand it. But the only way to understand it would be, well, you know, imagine every time you heard a police siren, your clothes disappear, the weather turns freezing cold, and somebody throws a bucket of water on you. Now, imagine that experience. It's not nice, is it? So, and then you have a bunch of people around you saying, "What is wrong with you? Why are you being so weird for?" And you're like, "Well, you know." And so, yeah, it's an interesting experience. I hope that kind of answers somewhat the question.
Yeah, I'm understanding that it is painful in your body, like a shock or a jolt feeling. Is it mostly like in the heart space or like stomach, or is it like everywhere?
It's kind of like, it's like all down your back. It's like your back area, you know, like the main back piece from your shoulders, kind of like thing, and like back of my neck, my head. Sorry, I can't talk about the noises because I can remember them, and that stimulated recall is quite uncomfortable. So just certain noises like plastic bristles, you know, like toothbrushes, dry toothbrushes, things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess the only way, you know, because everyone can experience uncomfortable sounds. Like a lot of people don't like fingernails on a sure. blackboard or a chalkboard and stuff, which I don't mind. Ironically, I don't really care about that. But it's that kind of sensation, that's the uncomfortableness, but it comes from like the most bizarre and random things, you know? But on the contrary, things that I find really soothing is I like rubbing things that are like, smooth as well, and that noise that gives off
yeah
is really nice.
Yeah,
so I often find myself just rubbing my face on things or just rubbing things just to hear the noise, and I guess it's a form of stimming, which is soft stimulatory behavior, which is a soft soothing mechanism that people on the spectrum do in repetition when they're and it's funny because excitement and anxiety are the same feeling deep down, right? And so it's how you define it in the situation which creates the outcome from you as a person. So you'll stim, an autistic person will stim when they're feeling nervous or excited, but they'll also stim when they're feeling anxious or worried, because those type of feelings will interlock. They are exchangeable, and it's kind of a really interesting technique where you can try and if you're feeling nervous about something, you can tell yourself, "No, let's replace that nervous feeling with excitement." And so the adrenaline that runs through the system at that time, because it's creating that kind of rapid succession of, you know, short breath and happy, it's a state of mind where you are within that, which is fascinating. And I've been trying to work on this for a while now, and getting there slightly, but it does take time.
It does take time. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Sure. Eric, did you have any questions or anything that land for you for that?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I've been thinking, thank you so much for sharing that, Daniel. And your personal experience, really important to me to hear. Really, really important. I think there's a couple of misconceptions or myths, and you may already cover this on your channel, but I've never watched your channel. So one is that people on the spectrum have less emotions or are emotionally insensitive. I actually believe that people on the spectrum have greater sensitivity. And thank you so much for explaining as much as you could the physical sensation. It makes me think about trauma responses and how, as a young child, where the world is already big and the only way they have to communicate is crying. If a child was on the spectrum and already had the kinds of sensations you've explained, and I'm getting, you know, goosebumps thinking about this myself, you know, they just can't deal with the world. They have no way to do that. They have no way to express except to cry. And now they're conditioned, and this makes me sad to think about, they're conditioned. Parents don't know, maybe think they're doing something wrong and they want to silence the child or do whatever else. They use a domination paradigm. And now the child experiences that this isn't right. And so they're overstimulated. And then there may be a parent or a caregiver that comes in and says, "This is wrong," and does some form of punishment, abandonment, something like that. And now the child thinks that that's wrong. So it actually amplifies the effect. And then what happens is, and this is what's upsetting or crazy for me, which is this happens throughout their baby life and then their young life. And then if they're never cared for in the way that they need to be, when they get to a teenage life, then they're really challenged because they have years of this conditioning where nobody understands them. They're never heard. Nobody's ever soothed them. They've never learned a soothing technique, or the soothing techniques don't work. So if they're fortunate enough, they can self-soothe, as you've described, and they can take care of themselves. But if they're not, and if they live in a place that doesn't have that understanding, so what makes me hopeful is that we have greater understanding now and greater resources and awareness in general. I don't know if that's true everywhere, Daniel. I don't know if it's true where you live. We have greater awareness in general, and we still have problems. So I'm just thinking about this, and when I layer this on with nonviolent communication, is we get these learned responses as children, if we're lucky, by the time we get to adulthood, if we have these, we can encounter someone who will help us deprogram those things and give ourselves enough warmth so we can give ourselves warmth. And you do that through witnessing, accompanying, acknowledgement with another human being, because those wounds were created in relation. They, you know, the kids exist in relation with their parents. To heal that, you need other people. So if you get to a place, and it doesn't have to be nonviolent communication, where you can have that warmth and connection, you can detox that, deprogram it, so that the individual can then thrive in the future going forward. So that's what I'm thinking in terms of, essentially, there's a trauma response which is amplified if a person is on the spectrum. So I'm really excited to have your personal experience, Daniel, and your starting question, Katie. This is really so much learning for me. Thank you.
Sure.
That's what comes up for me. I'm complete for now.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that, because like when you think about, you know, autism isn't something that develops, because people obviously think that autism is something that either, a big misconception is that children, they grow out of having autism, right? Or like it develops at a certain time, or it's something that develops, but it's something that happens on conception. When your brain is, when the neurological paths are like fusing together in your brain, this is how autism happens, right? They kind of like, rather than going like this, they kind of go like this a little bit. And it happens. It could happen through a few things. It could happen through lack of oxygen. It could happen through trauma from the parent carrying the child. There's a bunch of things, right? Genetics, they don't really know the main cause of it, but there's a bunch of things. And you're right, you know, when a child is trying to learn, it doesn't differentiate itself for a good 7 weeks between itself and the universe around it. So it's having a really difficult time trying to communicate and have that flow of communication. And as we know, communication is, the definition of it is to move particles from this area of space to that area of space, have them then reciprocated back to this area of space, and the cycle continues. This is why we have a cycle of communication. But in terms of babies and small infants, crying is their only way to push particles out from one area of space. Mm-hmm. And it's how they receive those particles back, which is how they make that connection to which is right and wrong. But with autistic people, trying to understand that feedback won't work. So what happens is you have a, you know, a blockade of emotions and feelings and experiences that are literally just pent up. And so by the time the child's like 3 years old, they're climbing the walls and throwing TVs out of windows and peeing on like bed covers for no reason, you know, just like, and you're thinking, what on earth is this behavior? And the behavior is a repercussion of the inability to communicate effectively with the child on a level where they need to. Now, I've just started doing videos on toddlers and babies on the autism spectrum and how to deal with that, because obviously catching it and understanding communication as soon as you can get that is going to be way more beneficial to greater succession for the child's life, right? And we're trying to do that. And one of the things is, and I'm going to start introducing this on my membership with the parents that I coach, is this kind of like peaceful parenting. I don't really know the official term. I think it's peaceful parenting or calm parenting. Like you reaffirm and kind of qualify the child's, okay, you're sad, and that's okay to be sad. We all get sad, and actually to be sad is cool, because we now know that you don't like that thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being sad, because the flip side is you have parents saying like, stop being sad, you know, it's that's what it is, it's a fact of life, you know. And it kind of comes from this old like 1950s 1940s attitude, like, you know, muscle on, get on with it kind of thing, and parents, you know, like, you know, boys suck it in, boys don't cry, you know what I mean, all this kind of stuff. But I think like when you're dealing with people who have very difficult time understanding themselves, it's reaffirming to them at a young age that they are okay, and they're okay to do that. And I think, and this can work with anybody, but more importantly, it needs to work with people who have issues with communication, because this is what I have to tell you as well. When you know, growing up, I had a hard time understanding my own emotions. I have emotional irregular control, so I can't regulate my emotions. I have excessively angry, excessively happy. There's no in between, because it's very black and white with autistic people. The gray part is very much, it's not there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'd be really angry, and as soon as I calm down, I'm fine. And people would be like, oh my God, you know, what's going on with this guy? So, you know, like I can go to a funeral and then come home and be completely fine, because it's really difficult to really regulate those emotions. And so they do come out, but in other kind of behavioral aspects, you know, so it could be anger management or behavioral issues in school for kids, you know? So it's really interesting to install in the child, to let them understand and to have them really understand themselves. You really have to qualify is what you're doing. You're qualifying their experience and saying, okay, it's okay. So you qualify it, and then you just reaffirm, well, it's fine, you know? And but what autistic people want is the explanation. Yeah. because a lot of people will say, you know, okay, we're done with this now, we're going. And you're like, okay, and kids just kind of get on with it. You know, autistic kid would be like, why? Why are we done with this? And why are we going?
Yeah.
Where are we going to? But why is this done? We said, oh, you know, look, there's no more. You know, the theme park is closing, and now we have to go and eat dinner. And why we have to eat dinner is because we have to have enough food in our bodies to, you know, give us energy so we can sleep and get up and play again tomorrow. So having a greater explanation and having a little bit more time taken to understand that, it will really cap a lot of those emotions. And I think, I hope that kind of really answers what you were trying to, you know, talk about here. I know it's a very broad subject and it's very complex and deep, you know, so to really get into it would take a highly, you know, a computated hour of talking about it. But in a nutshell, that's kind of like why people react that way as babies.
Right.
So I have a question to follow up on the very last piece there. My guess is for what you're saying. So you said a little more explanation would help with the understanding, which to me is a cognitive process or a left brain activity. To me, it's actually, this is my guess, I want to hear your actual reaction. To me, it's actually more about the care and nurturing of the kid and taking the time to sit there, you know, maybe kneel down and talk to him and say, hey, you know what? I know you really want to stay, and here's what we need to take care of. It's actually, although the intellectual understanding, I think, helps, my guess is actually it's the care and the tone and the nurturing that makes the difference rather than the intellectual understanding. I'm asking a question and making a statement.
Kind of. Let me put it in this respect. You know, it's difficult for me to understand if someone is talking to me happily or sad. I don't understand that. It's very difficult to understand if someone's communicating to me in an aggressive tone or a happy tone. I prefer text messaging because it's an equal playing field and you have to really express yourself through little gestures or emojis or pictures. You have some way to articulate the way you are feeling rather than someone to just guess it through an audio experience, because this is very confusing, especially if you don't know the person that well. So the tone doesn't matter because it has no relevance to the person. They're just wanting the raw data, but the care in how you present that raw data is what makes a difference. So like rightfully what you said, the evolution of what you would say with a neurotypical kid, you know, a kid who wasn't on the spectrum, you'd be like, it was the way you do it, you know, the tonality and the physiology, maybe you touch their shoulder and reaffirm to them, you know. But in terms of a child on the spectrum or a neurodivergent child, it would be more to be like, okay, let's come sit over here for a second. We need to make a plan. And by creating a plan of action, by taking the care to really present to them as an individual what's going on, like they're part of the group and they also have a say in what's happening, that has a greater succession for the outcome rather than the tonality or even the physiology of what you're trying to do there. I hope that kind of makes sense.
So the tonality doesn't make a difference, but the actual structure of including and consulting and collaborating for you makes more of a difference. So then that, I see you nodding. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
So then my next question is this: in a one-on-one situation, I'm just so curious, Daniel, in a one-on-one situation, if you were sitting in a room with them, excluding any physical touch, do you experience warmth from another human being based on your interaction? I ask that as neutrally as possible in this moment. Do you experience the idea or the feeling of warmth?
That's a very complex question, because there's two parts to being human. There's a physical reality experience, and there's also a spiritual experience, right? Which is a resonance or a vibration, which is a connection between every single thing in the world, right? Which is,
yeah,
could be plants, animals, trees, people, desks, you know? So can I feel warmth from people without even speaking to them? Probably, yeah, 100%. But it's their action and intent. So spiritually, if their intent is warmth, love, and kindness, then I'll feel that, right? If they physically show me that they're doing actions of, you know, love and care, then yeah, I can feel warmth towards that person. But in terms of just looking at somebody and knowing, it's really difficult unless they show it in some way, you know, that there's a, you know, that it's really, it's difficult. It's difficult to know. It's kind of like this, Everybody says that like autistic people have a hard time with empathy and knowing other people's kind of like, you know, being, putting yourself in their shoes. But what it really is really you have a difficulty understanding typically sussing out a person, seeing, you know, is this person gonna be a dangerous person? Am I getting in a lift with like a crazy person who's gonna stab me, or am I getting in a lift with someone who's just going home to their kids and they've had a rough day? Like, it's really difficult. There's no different, like, it's hard to make that differentiation. Like, that kind of an intuition that you feel with people is very difficult to kind of like really nail down. So it's hard to identify and qualify people in that respect. So autistic people need more factual based knowledge that's presented in a linear format, like, hi, I'm Bob, and I've just killed 6 people. Okay, Bob, look, I'm going to go. Right. You know, like, that would be the way that we, you know what I mean? Like, that's how it would be presented. Like, that's the only way, because that inability to really suss that out is missing. And the reason is because, whereas there is communication happening there, right? So that you've got, like, this guy coming in and he's sharing particles of space with you, and you're reciprocating that, you have a cycle of communication. But the problem is the autistic person's mind is not focused on this. Their attention to everything else that's going on is that the temperature is at this much, there's a noise going on here, the light is here, right. I'm wearing clothes, my clothes, the inside seam of my clothes, can I can feel this right now, there's a bead of sweat running right down my back. I have to make sure that I'm in by 6 o'clock because I want to put that lasagna on directly at 6:30 because I need to be sitting down and watching my favorite show at that time. There are so many variables that goes on that are flowing through an autistic person's brain at any moment in time. Like right now, I'm actually doing a million and one things whilst talking to you guys. It's hard to kind of say when a neurotypical person is faced with a situation, it is the situation at hand that they are focusing on. An autistic person does not have that ability,
yeah.
Or doesn't default to that ability.
When you were talking about the kids and having a factual understanding of why we're shifting or transitioning into one thing to another, it could be all gray for us. We could understand why we're transitioning from this to that. But the child who might be on the spectrum doesn't have that ability to see that gray part. So it's like, okay, so, you know, we're going to stop what we're doing right now because we, you know, have to transition to getting ready, then to head to the park or however it may be. So I'm just making sure that I'm understanding that correctly.
Yeah, well, I actually have a download, a PDF download, or a digital download that I sell on my store, and it's called the Now and Next card, where it literally is a piece of paper, and you have, on this side, you have now, and on this side, you have next. So you say, you know, you might write and draw a picture of the park or have a sticker, and you say, hey, we're in the park now, and next, we're going to the pizza place, you know, and then you present that to the child, and the child can see it. Because, you know, one of the things which is difficult for me is to have like written instruction from somebody. This is my own handwriting, it's terrible, but somebody give me like written instruction and say follow this, I'm like, I have no idea, you know, like cooking and stuff, or cooking instructions, I mean, just forget it. But if somebody said like, I'm going to draw you pictures, you know, talk to you as I'm drawing them, there's a difference there, and I can get that communication. So that's why now and next, and you're absolutely right, now and next is one of the main ways we do that, and it's one of the main kind of teaching sources for children on the spectrum as well.
Awesome. And then you also mentioned the word neurotypical, I believe that's what you said.
Neurotypical. Yeah.
Could you explain what that is for those who may not know?
Sure. So autism is a neurodevelopmental condition, right? And so there's two types of, or they call them neurotribes. There's two tribes of species, neurological species in the Homo sapien that we're currently experiencing. One is neurodivergent and one is neurotypical. Neurodivergent means that their brain, their neurological paths are evolved slightly differently. You know, they fuse together differently. Whereas neurotypical, their neurological paths are typically forming as they have been for the past kind of like, you know, I don't know, 400,000 years. So in terms of like, the term neurotypical, it just typically means not autistic. Whereas you say neurodivergent is someone who is autistic. And that's basically it, you know, and it could be anywhere from savant syndrome to ADHD, you know?
Right. Cool. Thank you for clarifying that. Sure, no, I just problem. Wanted to make sure. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, Eric. What was it that you were going to say?
Oh, that's fine. I was quite happy with the flow there. That really helped. And that actually answered my question, Daniel. What I heard was a couple things. Number one, there's just a lot going on in the neurodivergent mind, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of stimulation, and those two combined with managing many, many things, plus much stimulation, essentially, to me, sounds like a constant state of overwhelm, and the way I understand it in this moment. And then I would even guess it might even be tiring or fatiguing to try to suss out or try to pull out the pieces that you need. And by having concrete things like the now and later cards with a graphical helps focus and actually gives ease from the overwhelm. How does that sound?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I'm constantly overstimulated. Like I it's hard to explain, you know, because I talk very fast as well. So because I talk almost as fast, like I'm thinking really, really fast. I'm thinking about a lot of things constantly. And, you know, that occupies a lot of the beingness of a person, right? But then you've got all the other things. You've got like sensory input from light, you've got sound, you've got smells, you've got taste, touch, sound, like everything. Heat, ridiculous. People forget about that, but heat is such a big one, you know? And so you're always on that, you're always on that edge of being overstimulated. So you're absolutely right. And what you said was correct. And that's why when people talk about helping and supporting autistic people, what they're doing is they're saying, how can you externally control or help implement something that person would have done normally, naturally, if they were neurotypical, right? So an autistic person, you know, is so overwhelmed and stimulated with what's going on, they don't know how to navigate around the store because, like, you know, there's too many things, there's too many lights and stuff, you're completely overstimulated. So the help and support in that region would be to take control of the situation and say, okay, we're going to walk this way. So it's not taking control of the person's life. What I'm trying to say is that it's helping them navigate and control the bits that are out of control in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it would be about meeting a person where they're at, whether they're a child or an adult. And this could happen. I would hope that we would, as human beings, be sensitive enough that we would want to do that and be compassionate enough to do that with anyone, regardless of who they are or where they're from.
100%.
Or what their neuro status is.
yeah. Which tribe they're in.
So thank you for that. That's so helpful.
Yeah, sure. No, you're absolutely right. You know, and it's kind of like, that's the big thing of life, isn't it? Knowing when, you know, good people versus people are going to take advantage. And that's it. It's a big thing of life.
Yeah. All of this reminds me about Permission to Feel, Mark Brackett. That's his book. And I've been trying to do his book clubs that he does. And one of the things that he talks about is, say somebody comes into the room and they're very, very excited. You know, like me, I'm normally like, yeah, here we go. And that can also be a lot for somebody who may not sit in that space or may feel anxious around that space. So it made me, when you were talking, I was thinking about how my energy could also like be overwhelming for some. And or say somebody who's more like calm or has a subdued sort of very ease personality maybe, or their mood is normally like very calm, that can be even for the other person who is very much high energy may go, well, what's going on? Why are you excited and happy and joyful for all of this? And they're like, but I am. It's just on a whole different level. So I was curious if you come across where, say, like me, who is a very energetic person, and if that's something that could just wash over you is like overwhelming or maybe too much stimulation or too much energy. I was just curious if that affects you in any way.
You know, it's funny that there is that. I have come across that. Not, and it's funny. It's not in the way that you said. It's not overstimulating. Because I have ADHD that's comorbid with autism, which is co-occurring with autism, which is very, very typical. It's like 90% of the time it's diagnosed with people on the autism spectrum. And so I'm quite hyperactive. I'm actually heavily medicated. So this is why I'm not too hyperactive right now. Even though I am still hyperactive, I'm not as hyperactive as I would be if I wasn't on medication. But in terms of like, when I meet people of equal energy, I get to kind of like flow, you know, I have that kind of rapport with them, right?
Okay.
But the opposite happens when I meet somebody who is very just super chill and just like very not wanting to do crazy stuff. I'm like, oh. And that's overwhelming. It's overwhelming to be with somebody who's not as hyperactive. And so all of my friends are nuts, are completely insane. You know, like almost all my friends have ADHD. And you know, they all do crazy stuff, you know, like, and they, you know, they're a bit out there, you know, they're kind of like, I don't know if you ever watched Jackass, that kind of like TV show from the 90s, that all my friends are a bit like that.
Yeah.
A bit crazy. And I love that because I feel kind of that camaraderie and that rapport from them because I understand on their level. But you know, what's funny, I have experienced overstimulation from things like people's perfume, you know, or their clothes,
okay,
or their haircuts. And that's really bizarre. But that does happen. You know, you've been around people who have like their cologne or whatever is just too much. It's too overstimulating. All the clothing that they're wearing is overwhelmingly stimulating because I can't make logical sense of it. but sometimes it's kind of the stimulation. So what I'm trying to say is the input, the data input is not, it's not, I'm not retrieving the input specifically well.
Sure.
So how to, it's really difficult to explain this. I'm on the spot, I suppose. It's kind of like being shocked by somebody's appearance, but rather than just being like, wow, I'm shocked by his appearance, it's kind of like going, wow, I'm shocked by his appearance. I have to make sense of it. I thirst to make sense of it. And then you start feeling kind of really thirsty. And like, I need to make sense of it. And then it just becomes this level of hyper stimulation that just, yeah, could blow out, you know. Right. It's crazy.
Right.
I want to see if I understand something. You said you have friends who are just crazy. To me, that means providing high data rates of information and ideas and creativity and language, everything. And those, yes, that's your body actually physically settles down.
Yes.
When you're with these colleagues, these friends, these co-jackasses, all of these people, you're most settled physically in your body when you're with and among these individuals. Yeah. Is that what I heard?
That's correct.
But if you're sitting in a room across from me, and we're just staring into each other's eyes and saying a few words at a time, that might be overwhelming. Like, the shirt might be overwhelming to you.
Yeah.
In that moment.
100%.
Because there's no data or low data rate. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. It's under stimulated data.
Yeah.
So like the way my brain works is it has to be fast stimulated data. You know, when I listen to, I do my own kind of closed captions for my videos. And so when I listen back to my videos, I put them at 2% higher, so I double the speed of playback because I can hear things. And when I listen to books, you know, when I listen to my audiobooks, I put them almost to the fastest setting because I can hear that fast. You know, that's why I like rap music and stuff, because I like listen to the fast pace because I can hear every word because I speak as fast as that.
Right.
But when people are super like, I'm like, oh my goodness. It's almost like trying to run really fast, but being held back, you know, that's kind of like, yeah, where it's like.
Eric, you listen to things that are like 2 times as fast. You were like, I listen to your podcast and it's,
yeah, I listen
on the fastest setting.
I listen to Katie's podcast, not the ones that I'm on because I can't stand the sound of my voice, but Katie's podcast with her other co-host, I will listen to at least 2x.
Yeah.
But then if there's someone like Daniel who's on there, I have to listen to it at maybe 1.2 or 1.5. So a Daniel podcast, I'd probably do 1.2 or 1.5. A Katie podcast is going to be at 2x.
It's funny you should say that, because I have a podcast out, and we're on season 3 of the podcast. But you know, it's funny. I have some people, because a lot of people tell me to slow down. They say, slow down, you talk too fast. And so I talk about this in my videos and podcast, and I have so many messages from people saying, what are people talking about? I listen to you at like double speed. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like,
right.
These people are as crazy as me.
Makes sense. I mean, absolutely. I don't mind people talking fast because my brain, I can, for the most part, pick it up. I don't have a problem with that. Sometimes when I do feel as though someone who is the opposite in not meeting me, so say they talk really slowly,
yeah,
or they pause and I'm actually filling in, which can be annoying to some people, what they may say next, because I'm like trying to keep up the speed in my own head.
Trying to anticipate what they're going to do.
Yeah. So like I was like, and then like I want to finish their sentence. Though I don't mean to do it intentionally to be mean or rude or anything.
Yeah.
More of my intention is to like keep my brain processed and like going a little faster. So I see what you mean.
Yeah, man, I get it.
Maybe I can ask a question then, or this is my guess, and this is going to be wrong, but I want to say it anyway. My intuition was before that there is a physiological and a psychological component to this particular piece, which is that, for example, wanting the stimulation and then not getting it, and then again having this overwhelm all the time, it's a physiological thing. But there's also, I'm wondering if there's a learned component to it as well, which is I'm not getting the data rate I want, and so I get frustrated and angry. So there's an emotional additional overwhelm that goes on top of that, which is,
yes,
conditioned over 18, 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. And then it makes it even harder. The reason I say this is because I went to my first nonviolent communication intensive training, and it was so slow the first 2 days. I was literally dying. It'd be like, welcome to the circle. We'd just like you to take off your shoes and just be here in silence with us for 3 minutes. And I'm sitting there, oh, please, please, not 9 days. Please, not 9 more days of this. And then, you know, 5 days in, I was like, wow, this is great. I can't believe we only have 4 days left, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just wondering if you have any experience with that or any thoughts or any research on that particular piece.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, you know, a lot of the behavior of autistic people, a lot of erratic behavior of autistic people come from a suppression of the inability to communicate. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right? You know, like suppressed data of, you know, and it's overstimulation, and then there's an emotional kind of like feeling that's never kind of reciprocated outwards. And then it starts, you know, and it blocks up and blocks up. And, you know, this happens not just on the macro scale, on the micro scale as well, in a day-to-day life of an autistic person, where this would happen as well. You know, they'll be like, they'll be understimulated or overstimulated by something, depending on what, you know, how they work, how they operate. And then, you know, that emotional overwhelmingness would be non-communicative to themselves, so they won't be able to understand that. And then it'll eventually become too much, and that boat will get rocked. And what you then have is an autism meltdown, which is somebody who has this overwhelming kind of, it's hard to deal with, you know, and it's brutal. It's horrible. I have this, a lot of autistic people do, we hit our heads, you know, it's really difficult to deal with. And it's almost like a knee-jerk reaction. I can't help it. I wish I didn't do it. I want to not do it. I do it less now because I'm on medication, but it does happen, and it's probably one of the most horrible things, you know. And so that happens, and it does happen, you know. And that's too much of it. Kind of like, it's like pouring water into a glass. You have to say stop at one point, otherwise it's going to spill everywhere, man. So
thank you so much. This is really helping me both on an intellectual and on a compassion level, Daniel. This is wonderful. Thank you.
Sure.
My question is meditation torture to you?
That's funny you should say that. No, you know, I'm a very spiritual person. I have a relationship with the universe or God, however you want to say it. And I pray every morning and every evening, and I pray during the day sometimes as well. I practice various types of things like the Eightfold Path from Buddhism. You know, I'm a vegan. I'm straight edge, so I don't drink alcohol or caffeine or any drugs or anything like that. No narcotics, nothing. And meditation is exceptionally difficult, because thought chatter exists in everybody, but with people with an ADHD and autistic brain, thought chatter is like a nuclear explosion going off.
Yeah.
So to calm the mind and to be there and still, it's difficult. I have found a technique, actually. I don't know if I want to talk about it. I don't talk about my spiritual or religious kind of practices publicly ever. I mean, we could discuss it when we're not recording, but I do spiritual counseling, I'll say that much, and that helps me get to a state of meditative understanding. And that's fascinating. There's a way, there's a technique to do it, but this is not the podcast to talk about that on.
Sure.
So yeah, it's to try and meditate traditionally is very frustrating.
Right.
In a nutshell, to say that.
And I think of like the traditional meditation for me anyway, is like a guided, I'd listen to somebody talking and then integrate breath exercises or whatever. Is that the same of what you're thinking?
100%. Yeah. So like having a practitioner or a guided meditative experience is a lot greater to bring you to succession than, say, on my own doing that. Because I've done a lot of yoga as well, so I do a lot of meditation and Tai Chi, and it's very difficult to try and to calm that mind. Once you get there, once you can get it, it's easy to get back there. But I guess to kind of initiate that first sequence of understanding is very difficult. And I do sympathize with people on the spectrum when someone says, you know, like, I have anger issues, I'm on the spectrum. They say, I just do some meditation. I'm like, I'm going to flip a table.
Yeah, right.
And that's what it feels like, you know, when people say that to me, like, you know, I feel like flipping tables sometimes. I'm like, you don't understand.
Right.
Me. And so that's why maybe I should start a channel on that. Maybe I should do a channel on kind of like, you know, spiritual and non kind of traditional therapy for autistic people. Maybe, I don't know.
I bet people would find that really interesting and maybe even helpful in their own life, because we all have maybe some, and maybe some people don't, a spiritual practice of some sort, and you know, how to integrate that with all your spiritual practices, meditation, and use tools for those who are on the spectrum too, so that you can create some more different ways to go about it than Eric or I. I don't think Eric meditates that I know of.
Maybe he doesn't.
Do you?
I do.
Oh.
I do, but not very much.
Right.
Not very much. It's hard to describe. But yeah, usually in the morning and usually in the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. Not the 20 minutes, you know, sitting with the ohms.
Right.
But I do some breathing. I do some breathing, and I would like to do a loving kindness meditation. I love one on YouTube, but
check out Eric. Check.
I always feel like I have stuff to do. Go ahead.
Check out yoga meditation. Yoga meditations are kind of a lot more achievable than kind of like Bodhisattva kind of traditional Eightfold Path meditations, right? If you look at kind of like some like mainstream yoga meditations, they're really good. You know, and it's funny you should say about the Om. I didn't even realize what the Om. I kind of say to myself, I'm quite an intellectual person, you know, but I didn't even know until like 2 years ago. I didn't know what the Om was, you know, and I don't know if you know what that is and why you say that at the beginning, right? And I was just like, whoa, the Om is the is God, basically the all powerful kind of universe connection. That it's almost like a connection to open yourself up to, connect yourself to. It's like saying, dear God, allow myself this connection right now. And that's why you say it before and after you do yoga, you see, when you're doing your Padmasana, I think it's what it's called, when you do your lotus poses and stuff like that. So yeah,
I didn't know that.
And the humming too, the sound of the Om also like brings in, calms the nervous system down a little bit from what I've been learning.
Yeah, I have some Buddhist bells here somewhere, you know, the
oh, cool. Yeah.
Where are they? Hold on, give me just 1 second. I'm gonna do the sound. Yeah. Hold on, I gotta do the sound. I gotta do it.
Yeah, he's like me. He's gonna have to go find it now. Yeah.
Okay, I'm back now. Oh my god, t-shirts for everybody. No, don't. I do have the I do have these though.
Oh, I wanna hear it. Okay, yeah.
A lot of people get this wrong.
Yeah, let's hear it.
People kind of smash them together like they're symbols, but they're actually very delicate. Here we go.
Oh, that sounds good.
I like that.
That sounds good. Sometimes they don't sound good on Zoom or on the internet, and that sounded nice.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I love the sound. It's like you can't dong them together. It's almost like a tap.
Yeah, you've got to really lightly touch them. Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Everybody gets that wrong. Everybody does. Everybody's like, ding! It doesn't work.
Yeah, right. It's not like that. You're like, oh my god!
Someone starting the session off wrong. Yeah, it's like we're gonna throw all these bells across the room. Ready? Okay, now relax. Like it's never gonna happen.
Ready?
Like,
go. What's wrong with people?
yeah. Now you should all be calm.
Yeah. It's like, what the heck? Start as you mean to go on, right?
Oh, that's so funny. I loved when you on one of the videos you were watching movies that might have had kiddos on the spectrum. So there was one called Loop.
Yep.
And after you talked about that, I watched it and I was like, this is so good. And Dan is so right that it should be a little longer. And it would be so awesome to have more films like that for kids to watch, for adults to watch. And I enjoyed it so very much. And if you have Disney Plus, it's on Disney Plus and it's a short film called Loop. And, I'm sure. Did you see what he put? He didn't see. He's going to have to see it when he gets back. Yes. I love humor. Humor is my all-time favorite. I don't know if you've seen the kid who does the like teacher jokes with his dad. He like walks
in. Oh, yeah, I have. And I have, he's, yeah. On TikTok, right? Oh.
Yeah, where he's like, hey, dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But I've watched it on Facebook because I don't have TikTok. But he like walks into the room and he's talking about, tells his dad jokes as his dad's sitting there. And I think his dad's laugh is like so funny.
Infectious, yeah.
It's very infectious.
Dude, there's a thing. I don't know if you've ever been to any like Buddhist kind of temples, but they try to laugh as much as possible. They have to. Like humor is the sole part of Buddhism. Like they just... You know, they always say, like, if you're not having fun, you're not really doing it right, you know, and it's so true.
Right.
Because it has to be fun. You have to have a laugh. You mean, like, goodness me, you know, laughter feeds the soul. And what are we doing if we're not trying to feed our souls, right? What are we just bumbling about in the dark on a rock in space, aren't we? Which is quite a funny concept to think about.
I know, like, infectious laugh, are you at all affected by people that laugh or in the infectious laughter? Does it make you laugh?
I do. It makes me smile when I hear people laugh because it's a very dominant emotion. If people are laughing or if people are hysterically crying, I can usually differentiate the two. But anywhere in between is difficult. Sometimes, though, I do have a difficult time finding knowing if someone is crying or they're laughing, but I can always tell if someone's laughing.
Right.
How weird is that?
That makes sense.
Yeah, I do love it.
Have you tried the yoga laughing? Isn't there like such a thing where you go in a yoga class?
I haven't, but yeah, there is. Yes, there is. And they play a tape of people laughing just to make you feel a certain way and get you to laugh, right? I've done, I have. I know someone who did it and they said like, it was the weirdest thing they've ever experienced. I think what you have to do is rather than listen to a tape of random people laughing, I think you have to sit there and just tell a joke and then everyone just like ball around laughing because we all do it. Social conventions are when people are trying to make each other laugh because they want humor. Humor feeds the soul, right, again. And so they all start laughing and then you start laughing because somebody else is laughing or your mum's crying with tears laughing. You're like, oh my God, I can't deal with it. You know, that kind of stuff is so good. And we all feel good after a good laugh. It's just great, isn't it? It's fantastic.
It's so fantastic great stuff. My abs get worked out. It's like the best ab workout you can have.
Your jaw starts to ache, like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Or my face hurts as my cheeks are like just they get sore. My smile.
Sore cheeks.
The muscles.
It's so true.
Oh. What would you do if, say, somebody didn't want to, who was on the spectrum and didn't want to just explain everything about the fact that, you know, you are on the spectrum and you needed maybe some peace and quiet or maybe things were too loud? How would you go about asking for a request of them to quiet down, or how would you ask them that you may need space? Or quiet time? Like, how would you do that without having to explain the whole thing?
It's a fantastic question. You know, there are what you asked was a very kind of complex kind of version of what you would do. But really what someone needs in communication, again, if we just break it down to a particle, is you're just trying to exchange a single particle and get that particle back. And that's all you need to get successful communication. So what we do is, I don't have any because luckily I'm blessed with the ability of, I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which used to be called high functioning autism. We don't use those function labels anymore because they're quite hurtful and harmful and they're not very good. So now what they call it is I have low support needs autism, which means that I can verbally articulate myself and I have a great vocabulary and lexicon. So I can say to somebody, hey, I really need to take myself out and have some quiet time.
Yeah.
But if people are nonverbal, or if people don't have that ability to really understand themselves, like their self-exploration, like I have, there are like wristbands that are green on one side and red on the inside. And so you put it on green and it's like an indicator. It says like, hey, look, I'm feeling quite happy right now. Everything's neutrally fine, right? And there you go, particle's gone, received, everyone understands. But if you needed space or you needed to go somewhere else or you needed food or you're getting upset, flip that to red. The people around you will know, hey, there is something amiss here. Let's try and compute it. It's like, do you need some space? Do you need some water? Right? And then succession will be then happening. You know, that would, you will bring yourself to succession. So I think, you know, you don't really have to say specifically, you know, hey, look, I'm on the spectrum and what happens is I need to, you know, you don't need to go into this huge kind of like essay or a lecture about what you need. You just need to tell somebody that you need their help. That's all you're asking for. You know, there's no time to sit there and explain everything if you can't. So just simply just flick that around, and that's the best way to do it.
I like that. It gives me more compassion to take notice of that little cue there without having someone to over explain or have to explain anything at all, because that just would make, and the car,
it's kind of like what this is for, right?
Yes,
so that you can walk this out. And this is more of a, like, so you get stopped by the police and you're overwhelmed and the police might be like, oh, this person's being shifty, right? You give this to the police, and on the back it tells you typical traits of like autism and what to expect and what this person may experience. And then the police can scan this QR code and go to my website, and my website has a very detailed list and videos and all sorts of stuff, like articles, videos, podcasts about autism, but very niche, so that the person can just watch it there and now. And so this is very important. This is why this is the bestseller on my site. Yeah, that's another option.
I love that you have that available for people. That is so awesome.
Thanks.
Ugh, man. And I've never heard anything of that ever before. So that's great that you've created this.
Thank you.
I was thinking maybe specifically those bracelets, I'd like to buy a bunch maybe for my boss and for my wife and my kids. And then they could let me know exactly what they're feeling, so I would know how to orient to them all of the time.
Goodness me.
So I love this as a strategy.
I mean, you know that
What's that?
I mean, that is, you know, I mean, like a lot of people use it. I mean, in special educational needs schools, they have like a big board on the wall, and they have the picture of all the students and they're Velcroed or they're sticky to the wall. And then the kid comes in, and then here you have a big circle that says happy or sad or I don't know. And then they come in and say, how are you feeling today? And the kid takes a picture of themselves, and then they put it on whichever one is relevant to them. Now, what the beauty of this is, during the day, the kid's kind of feeling frustrated, and they don't want to talk about it. They could just take their picture off and put it on the upset circle, so everyone knows, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really good way of showing visually, because people in the autism spectrum are more visual people, you know? It's a good way of showing stuff. So I suppose in your house, you could make a happy and sad chart and just say, like, put yourself wherever you want, you know, have a sticker of them, or on the fridge. Like, you could just, like, divide the fridge into two sections.
Put it in the hallway with Post-its notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the fridge. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great idea. Wow, I love this. And I love it because in the practice of nonviolent communication, and probably, as you know, in mindfulness generally, one of the things we want people to do is to identify more feelings. So eventually we go from happy and sad to, you know, frustrated and angry to joyful and ebullient, and increase the vocabulary. So I really like this in terms of both creating a pattern of communication for people who may find it challenging, and as well as a route towards supporting, you know, what I'm thinking is it's maybe a gift, actually, that if you have this for individuals who have low or high support needs, that other people could actually learn from this and apply it in their own daily life. That's what I'm taking away from this.
100%, 100%.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for this.
Cool, guys.
Yeah.
Just having that, actually, you know, that's what it is. Actually, I'm loving this so much. Having enough awareness that a person could then be like, hey, you know, I have this situation, and they have this way to indicate, I'm going to do that now at work or in school or with my other classmates or with my other coworkers. So, yeah, this is really wonderful. Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, no, you're more than welcome.
Yay.
Always happy to help.
Yes, absolutely. I have one more thought and question from the things that I've been watching. So I watched Finding Cooper's Voice.
Yep.
She was doing, I don't know, it must have been a podcast. I don't know if she has a podcast, but it was a recording with someone. And actually, I might have be getting it confused with maybe one of yours. But it was a theme of how kids, even at younger ages, were treated so poorly when they would stem or when they would have behaviors because their needs aren't being met in the way that would be very helpful to them. And it was just almost like having to sit on your hands, things like this is just, it. I felt so sad to hear both the experience, one, the person you were talking with, I think it was on an Instagram Live, and then what, I think her name's Kate.
Kate, yeah, there's Kate.
Yeah, she was interviewing somebody. And also along with that, with people who are trying to go to the doctor to get the support they need, even when they are adults, I want to know, my heart goes out to those kiddos who were treated poorly like that. It like touched my heart so much. I'm like, why does our society have to be like this? And then also, like, do you have any, I know, because I do know that you have a lot of support, and we can put this in the description below in this podcast as well, along with all the other things, but how to get the support that you need when you are more of an adult and still trying to figure all of this out.
No, it's funny. I'm not entirely sure of the first question you asked. I'm not entirely sure what the question of that first part was. No, it's okay. But for definitely answer the second question. You know, the only way to access support for autism, and you got to think autism is a very, very new condition to really deal with. You know, you go back to the mid-90s, early 90s in the United Kingdom, there was nobody diagnosed with autism. You know, it was very rare. It's hard to find doctors who knew anything about it, but now it's becoming more and more information shared. It's becoming a lot more accessible through different charities setting up, etc. Now, the way to access support for autism is usually through your local mental health board, because they will be obviously trained with neurological conditions also, and your local doctors, because you can reach out through them. But the mental health teams will also be able to help with things like, you know, the support you're after is like therapies, right? And those are all covered within mental health, because mental health is a byproduct, or mental health issues are a byproduct of having an autism spectrum condition. So it's a good point of first kind of going to mental health boards. And the other thing is online community. I felt this is really good because when you feel part of a community that understands you, you feel accepted, right? And then you can ask them, well, what kind of support did you get? Where are you located? Because it all varies. You know, here where I am, you can get social workers, you can get respite, you can, the government are very good at what they do with in regards to helping support disabled people, but other parts of the world are not so good. You know, America's factioned off into different states, unfortunately. So you have different state rules and regulations and stuff. So right. It's a very difficult question to answer in a nutshell, but you have to do a bit of digging, you know, and I've tried to cover this many a time, but it's very difficult without saying to someone, just Google autism support, my area, hit enter and see what happens, because that's the only way you're going to know. Right. Local charities and mental health boards are the first point of call that I always recommend to people.
Awesome. Thank you. And then like whipping back to the kiddos who, because apparently this still happens, that they just don't get treated well in a classroom or in whatever, outside of the classroom. Is there any, how can we be an advocate for maybe a parent or the teachers that may not understand? Like how do we find ways?
It all comes down to like the reason the kids are not really understood is because the teachers don't have adequate training, right? And the adequate training comes from the fact that like it has to be something that the teacher says to themselves, I want to learn more about types of children and behavior of children, because you don't really get diagnosed until you're about 3 years old with autism, and sometimes, well, most of the time, a lot older than that.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to kind of go through those processes. So you got to think, kids when they first start in school, rather than the teachers going, "Oh, there's something potentially there's an issue here with the kid," they kind of say, "Oh, well, we're just gonna, this is the kid that's disruptive," and they get labeled as that, and it kind of carries on. So it's kind of like when you first introduce your child to a schooling environment, you have to make the school aware potentially they may have issues, and you're investigating it further. So please don't just dismiss them as being naughty kids, right? Sometimes they are naughty kids, you know, sometimes they are just kids who are just going to just terrorize the rest of the kids because they just didn't get enough love at home. But that will shine through. You can tell why a naughty kid is naughty, right?
Right.
You can see it. But if a kid's got really loving parents, grounded parents, and the kid has issues, you know, there's a different matter there. So I think it's having awareness of the teachers and parents who may see this going on, have awareness about it, and then just raise that question. Because if nobody says anything, the status quo will just repeat, and then, you know, the kid will just be in a bad cycle.
Well, I'll have to say, like, me being a teacher and getting my master's, there was no, like, oh, let's learn about ADHD. Oh, no. Let's learn about anxiety. Let's learn about the spectrum. Like, I mean, we're not actually getting into any of that stuff. You basically get tossed into the classroom, and then, you know, you're having to teach the class and then figure out along the way what tools and strategies may help this kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's trial and error almost.
100%. And there's no standard.
Right. It's not a standard at all to know these things. No. So I want to learn more. I want to put myself out there and watch all of the content that I can to understand more, so that when I am in the classroom, I can be more supportive and loving and kind in a way that they can feel seen and belonging and understood. And that's just, it would be my goal to do that and not put that label on them.
You're saying my course. I have a course out. I mean, me selling you stuff. But no, seriously, I do have a course out, and it's specifically for like parents and caregivers and teachers and those kind of people, you know. It's exactly what you're saying there, you know, the point where you say, okay, now I need to learn stuff about people on the spectrum. Like, where do I start? How do I do this? And this is why I did this course. So it'd be perfect for you, actually. So.
I think every school should take your course. Every teacher, every administrator.
Maybe. Well, I just thought, like, so the NHS, which is our National Health Board here in the UK, they've literally just purchased my course, actually. So I'm working with them now, which is quite cool. So the course is super cheap, actually. I just reduced it because, like, I wanted to make it, I did this course for the government, basically. I was teaching the government, and then I wanted to make it more accessible. So rather than have it like $1,000 for this course, which is 7 modules long, I reduced it to like $200, you know. So and that's why I did that, because I was thinking to myself, I want more people to take this course. How do I get it out to more people? And I thought, well, just make it more affordable, right?
Yeah.
So, and especially my manager's like, what are you doing? Like, but to me, it's kind of like, it's not about making huge amounts of profit on something. It's about getting the value out there and the value exchange. So I think $200 is a fair value for what I'm doing, right?
100%.
Anybody who's listening, or if you guys want to check it out, you can check out learnautism.net. That's my course. So just learnautism.net if you want to check it out.
Awesome.
Cool.
And I will love to have all the links that we can put in the podcast too, so we can help get the word out.
Sure, I'll send you everything. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, that would be awesome. All right, Eric, how are you feeling over there?
Well, pretty great. This has been a lot of fun. Unexpected, surprising, lots and lots of fun. Learned a lot. So thank you, Katie, for inviting Daniel. Thank you, Daniel, for being here and being you. And normally I'd say gratitude for myself for just showing up. But yeah, so thanks. Learned a lot. And that's me. I'm done for now.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan, for being on here. And I just want to open the floor to make sure that is there anything else that you have on your heart that you'd like to say or finish up with or a question that didn't get answered?
I know. I think we covered a lot of things. I'm just very grateful to spend time with new people. So thanks.
It's so exciting. I want to just give you both big hugs and... Thank you, listeners, for listening. And please, if you really enjoyed Dan, we would love to have you on again. And sure. Maybe if you are on again, we'll maybe have some listeners who brought in some questions that might have for you that you could help them with.
100%. This is actually something I'll say. If anybody wants to reach me, I literally talk to every single person who emails me or reaches out on a DM on Instagram or Twitter. So just get me on Instagram or send me an email at theaspieworld or theaspieworld@gmail.com. So definitely check it out. It'd be amazing. I definitely love to communicate with people. So yeah.
Yeah. And I love that you are open to that, because I was like kind of going, oh my God, is he going to, I don't, you know, because every time you reach out to anyone, you're worried, like they have crews and producers and like people that take care of all the things for them. You're like, am I really going to like talk to, and then when you responded to me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. The fact that you just, you are able to be reached. And I love that. And I bet everyone in the community, in your community, they love it too.
So. I hope so. I hope they do. But yeah, I make it a point. You know, what's the point of preaching something if you don't practice it, right?
Right. And connecting with all of us. So thank you, Living Connected, for listening. Remember to be kind to your heart and be gentle to your heart. And we will catch you on the flip side. And thank you again, Eric. And thank you again, Dan. It was great to see you and meet you.
Cool.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.